we go. It's the National Hour on Real Kipper and Bourne. We are live on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver and Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This hour of Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. As promised, Mike Keenan, 15th winningest coach in NHL history. Stanley Cup champion with the Rangers and now an author of Iron Mike, My Life Behind the Bench with Scott Morrison. Welcome in, Coach Keenan.
How are you, Kipper? Super. How about you?
I'm good. Thank you. Listen, I'm excited about you coming in as you go through your tour for your book. You're gonna have many people interviewing you, but how many that got to play with you or have you as a coach?
You're the only one.
This is it.
I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing for you right now.
Yeah. I think it's all right.
I'm dying to find out. I mean, this is great for me, and I'm fully entertained. Thank you very much for joining us today. An incredible life in the NHL. I before Kip gets into his questions, I just got to know, what was it like coaching Nick Kypreos? Can I not start there?
Oh, my God.
He was easy to coach, actually.
Was he?
Yes.
He is
very respectful of his teammates and was a big part of our team. I could say that about Kipper, but also we had a team that, a group of hockey players that really respected each other. They all bought in. I didn't have anybody that was really a complainer or lots of guys wanted to play more, but nobody was a distraction, put it that way.
Mm-hmm. The sense that I had out of you in the short period that we had together was that, you've had some of the toughest guys in the history of the game play for you, right? And if you want to go back to Philadelphia, from Dave Brown to Rick Tocchet to Joey Kosher for us, Gene Ogic in Vancouver. I mean, you're
in Chicago.
In Chicago. The tendency, I think,
and
for you.
And St. Louis.
And St. Louis, Chaser and Twist.
Twister.
Oh, my God. Jeez. But you tended to kind of leave us alone. You didn't mess with the tough guys too often. Did you feel like you didn't have to? Because obviously the challenge for a coach, especially with your style, was to maybe have more of a confrontation with your star players.
I don't know if the star players, but I'll back it up a bit. Okay, for the guys that were in that role that were tough and had to be ready, I didn't have to try to help them get ready for a game. I knew they'd be ready because they had to be ready or they're going to get knocked out.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a harsh way of saying it, but the tough guys, like you said, just leave them alone because I knew that they were preparing themselves. If anybody on the team was, they were. Because that's a tough role.
I had a fight with Chris Simon at Madison Square Garden one night, and after the game, I'm getting stitched up because he
nailed
cut me, but he nailed me with one. But it was a good fight for me, and you made it abundantly clear that you came into the room, you were with me with the doctor, stitched me up, you patted me on the back, you loved it, and I'm like, oh my God, he noticed me.
I've done something I need to do again.
The book. Tell me what it was like for you to go back and. Justin and I have written books as well, so we kind of understand.
By the way, I have your book on my counter.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. Just the whole process for you for, going back and peeling the onion back and, now you've got a magnifying glass. You're starting to remember stories. Just the whole process for you. How did you find it?
It was a long, tedious process. I was hesitant to start the book because I said, who really wants to read some of this? And it started with Jay Greenberg. Jay Greenberg, God bless him, died of all things West Nile disease. And then Scott Morrison was editing the book. So I asked Scott, would you pick it up? But it took a while. He wanted to reshape it a little bit and certainly write it in his style, which is different than Jay's. And Jay was the fellow that I talked to initially because he was a beat writer in Philadelphia in 84, and he said, one day I want to write a book with you. I said, okay, not thinking I'd ever write a book. And so that's the process. So as you go through it, it's interesting. Even yesterday I went to dinner with Scott, and Mike Polino, Dave Jameson, who played for me, and Jameson brought up a story about Boston Bruins. I said, Scott, did we put that in the book? He said, no. I said, oh, my God, that's a good story.
Yeah.
But I forgot all about it. So when you're trying to recall your life over and then your personal life and then your professional life over that period of time, 5 decades of coaching, you missed a few things. But you do at the same time unfold things that you say, oh, why did I do that? Mm-hmm. Or I could have done that better, or, oh, that was really good. So it's a process that is a thorough process, and kudos to Scott because he just kept poking the bear.
Yeah.
And, you know, asking for more and more. And I don't know if you read the introduction from Mess. That was incredible.
Yeah. Oh, no, I've been through the book.
Yeah, he was pretty generous.
I liked the start of the book. To those I've pissed off or disappointed, I meant well. Who are the people that you think about when you made that comment?
Well, there's a lot of times my impatient self took over, and I could have been more patient in the process and probably had the same results. But it's a result-oriented business. And the immediacy of it to win every night is the expectation. And I had, when I first came in, I had a real strong feeling that I owed the owner something because he hired me. Mm. And then you get into the process with the players, and the players owe you, or don't owe you, you owe them the guidance. But I felt we all owed the owner until you get into the getting fired and negotiating, and then how tough it is to deal sometimes with the owners. So I shifted my thinking a little bit, but there were times that I thought I could handle, and I'll give you a specific example, is Brett Hull. Brett Hull didn't want to coach. He was the first to mention after we've had a nice relationship since. He says, I didn't want any coach to tell me what to do. And that was obvious. But I said, mm-hmm. Holly, you have to have a little bit of guidance and structure out there. He says, yeah, I know, but so I could have, and from my teaching background, there's lots of I think, students that I had either at university and or in high school where I taught that you had to be patient with them because they were different. And the ones that were different, you have to handle them in a certain way, and you have to always be the adult in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And at times I was too emotional and got upset and frustrated with him, and I could have handled it probably better and got better results. I remember Jimmy Papp, and God bless Jimmy, was working with him. He said, Mike, give Holly a couple of days off, just as like a throw him a bone.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, that's not right for the rest of the team, and I'd have to do it for everybody. He says, no, this guy's different. You should do that to get him more on your side. And I didn't, but that's an example of people I could have handled better. And I'm not pleased with myself that I didn't.
Well, you know, you handled enough people well that you worked in a lot of great places. You won a Stanley Cup. I believe you're the 15th most winning coach in NHL history. You know, obviously enough of those relationships and the coaching went well for you. You know, I hear you say, talking about preparing players, you knew the tough guys were going to prepare themselves. Is that how you viewed your role in terms of pushing guys, was a preparation and making sure everyone was ready? Was that a priority of yours?
No, the priority was winning.
Yeah. And how did you get there?
And today the league's got 32 teams. So how do you, and back in our day, I went through periods of time through expansion and so on, but how do you get your team to be different? How do you get your team to separate themselves from the rest of the teams in the league? Because that's what it comes down to. You're all competitors. You're all trying to do the same thing. And some teams are more ready to win than others, and that's developmental and all that aspect. But how do you find a difference? And the difference is in preparation.
Mm-hmm.
Every night. So When I first started, it was 80-game schedule. So we had the youngest team in pro sport. We're not supposed to make the playoffs. Win the President's Trophy and go to the Stanley Cup Finals. And it was preparation. Just, you know, young kids, Peter Zezel, God bless Peter, Derek Smith, Talk, you mentioned. Kids are 18, 19, 20 years old. The oldest forwards were 26, Poulin, Propp, and Kerr. Howe was the oldest player in the team with McCrimmon, 28 and 29. So that's just an example of I came into the league and said, to be in pro sport, the whole objective here is to win. And that's your profession. You've chosen a profession of competitors in a competitive sport to win the toughest trophy in sport. And that's extremely difficult to do.
Coaches, players at the National Hockey League all have that feeling of wanting to win, but you know, your style. I want to talk to about you, about your style and how you push the envelope in those relationships that you've just mentioned moments ago, some moves or some things that you probably said or done, you regretted. The one line in the book, Mike, that kind of stood out for me was unpredictable.
Yeah.
And like, is that something that you learned through the process of teaching? Is that something that is just subconsciously coming to fruition the moment you start coaching these kids to say, you come to the rink, you won five games in a row, I don't care. I'm not satisfied, or I'm going to keep you on your toes. Well, like, it's a long season. For you to constantly be unpredictable, how did that begin?
Good question. And at different levels, like I'll refer to Forest Hill Collegiate. I didn't coach those kids like I coach pros. They're high school young men that enjoyed playing hockey in the Toronto Hockey League with the Toronto School Board, and they're students. But when you move in, and then I coach junior, and that's a little bit different, and then you coach major, junior, and they're now getting closer to being pros. They want to be pros. And then you start, and I coach the American League. They're pros. That's their profession. Mm-hmm. And now they're at that level trying to step up to the big league and play in the NHL. When you get there, then you have to, I felt you had to provide an environment that would be something that was different every day. It was never complacent, never the same, could never be boring. You don't get people to respond, and the idea is to get better every day. And that's a tough assignment. A really tough assignment.
The one thing that you could do with the pros that you couldn't do with the students was threaten to trade them. You did that a lot. You did it in New York with Leach and Chelios. I know you Brendan Shanahan in St. Louis, you threatened to trade him to.
I'll back that little comment up a bit, because, again, it goes back to all the circumstances and the environment that you're in. The ownership in St. Louis were really strapped for money. And Shanny, Hull, and McGinnis were all making $3 million at the time. And the ownership came in and said, you must trade all three of them. I said, you're going to have a mess here with your fan base. They said, we don't care. We can't afford them. I said, well, I'm going to start with Brendan because he's the youngest and he's going to be the easiest to trade. I traded for Pronger 7 years younger. So in the general manager's role, it looked like I had an issue with Brendan. I didn't have an issue with Brendan as a player. He was one of our best players, and we were in a Vancouver series. He broke his leg, and that was the reason we didn't win the series. But
they're vulnerable. The players are – you couldn't trade everybody. So what were you doing? Were you looking to see their reaction, how they handled the adversity of the threat? Like, what was the purpose behind it besides dealing with ownership?
That's an example. I didn't threaten them. But, yeah, there were some others. The whole idea was to try to make them step up or buy in or adjust their game to fit more into the team that we were assembling and to play better. Mm-hmm. I mean, the structure, I don't know if you remember this, Nick, but with Brian, I said, Brian, this is the way we want to play, and you got the green light. You're an exceptional player. You go when the situation arises. But when we first started, I don't know if you would realize this or know it, but he would always, not always, but often be ahead of the game, ahead of the play in the neutral zone. I said, Brian, you got to wait, and then you can go. And you understand? Yeah. So he did it. I said, Brian, no, let me review it with you again. We reviewed it. Do you understand? Yeah. Does it again. I said, Brian, one more time. Do you understand? You've got the green light. You're our best defenseman, one of the best in the league, but you have to be more patient and wait. But he was never held back or maybe taught that before. I don't know. So then I bench him, and I said, when you're ready to play the way I'd like you to play, let me know. I don't know. Do you remember what happened?
Yeah.
So during the first period of the next game, he didn't say anything the rest of the game. He just sat there. Next game, I didn't put him in a situation where I wasn't going to play him. That would be really silly.
Right.
But he was dressed, and then finally Mess stood up in the room and said, you better do what he tells you to do. We need you. Mm-hmm. And he turned around to me and said, I'm ready to play. I never talked to him again after that.
That would have – there's a good chance that would have ended ugly if it wasn't for Mark Messier.
Absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely. So, yeah. But I knew Mark and I had a bond and a relationship that he would come in. I said, can you look after this? He said, I absolutely will. And as you know, a real strong leader with the group, but he wasn't afraid to go to any player and say, look, I'm going to assist you with your relationship with Mark, but you got to adjust your game a little bit too.
We're joined by Mike Keenan in studio. The book is called Iron Mike, My Life Behind the Bench with Scott Morrison. In the book, you also talk about, the leadership of Mark Messier, and specifically in the playoffs when he came to you and addressed the team's feelings.
Yes.
Where you were sympathetic enough to come and apologize to us. Is that the only time you've ever apologized to a team?
No, I think I've done that before, but it was important at that time. And I trusted Mark's relationship with me, obviously, but also with the team. He knew the needs of the team, and he had a finger on the pulse of the team. So that was, that's important. I mean,
but you've tried that with
I go back to your father's team with the Islanders. I mean, Dennis Potvin will tell you that Al Arbor was really tough on him.
Yeah, my dad
really, really tough on Dennis. Dennis, the superstar defenseman on the team. But I know Dennis well, too, because I was with him a lot when I was in Florida. He was the color guy. And he's a strong-minded individual, and it would be tough to get him to adjust his game. But Al was really a lot tougher on Dennis than I was on any of our players.
Can you share with Justin the meeting that you had with Glenn Healy when you called him in? And Glenn Healy was... We're about
this
to play the Islanders.
This is humorous. Yeah.
I'll tee it up for you. We're about to play the Islanders, and Glenn does a newspaper article in the Post talking about Al Arbor and what Al would do in certain games or situations.
Yeah.
So Iron Mike calls in Glenn Healy, and I'll let you take it from there.
So I said, so what's the difference between myself and Al? He said, Al's won 4 cups. You haven't won any.
Yeah.
Attaboy, Heel.
Yeah. That changes it a little bit, I suppose.
Get out. And then Heel says the next 2 words were, get out.
That was witty on his
behalf. Yeah,
he's sharp as you know.
I
actually closed the door and started laughing.
Yeah.
So.
I do have questions, but you have such background with him, and I don't want to take it. If you have things you want to get to.
No.
All right, well, I just want to know, culturally, you know, the evolution of being a coach has changed. You know, the way that players are talked to, handled, whatever. What are your thoughts on where it's gone?
Well, I could say this, that, and this would be interesting for you to hear, but if you don't evolve with the generations, I coached in five different decades. Yeah. Not pro, but, you know, I started with the high school teams, and if you don't make the adaptation, then you're out. I came to a point, I guess it's my own fault, but I could have coached 10 more years in the NHL for fun. Mm-hmm. But they lost confidence that I would be able to adjust. I proved that I could. I went to a foreign country and won a championship where nobody could speak English. But you make that adjustment, and then there's also the impact. When I first went to Philadelphia, the entire team made $2 million. Mm. The highest paid player was Markell at $250,000. He's a superstar. But I did coach Wayne and Mark when they were making the most money in the league. Wayne was probably near $7 million at the time.
The 90s.
But they were a different generation. Walter Gretzky, we used to ride with me when I was coaching Canada Cups. The practice is, don't be treating my son differently. He's no different than the rest. I said, Mr. Gretzky, Wayne Gretzky is different. But the generations change. And I'm going to make a comment that I've made in the last few days doing these tours, that Paul Maurice, who's a friend of mine, drove the notion with the Florida Panthers and reverted back a little bit to old school. And they were tough. They borderline stay out of the penalty box. But it was a solution to win the Stanley Cup in today's game. And I'm going to be very interested to see how many teams now make that shift. And they come out first game and they smoke Boston. And Boston's supposed to be a tough competitive team. It wasn't even close. So those generational changes, and the players, like the guys on the fourth line, are making, what, $700,000 now? Mm-hmm. $900,000? And then the big boys are making $11, $12 million. But it's the relationship. And you mentioned, I coached 50 Hall of Famers, and they were easy to coach. Mm-hmm. For the most part, easy to coach. What do they want? They want ice time. What do they want? A little bit of organization, but they also want to do their own thing.
Right.
They're talented.
You talk about evolving. Are we in agreement that if you coached today and said, did the things that you have during your career, you wouldn't last 5 minutes?
No, I'd last 3 minutes.
Yeah.
2 minutes.
Yeah. 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Two minutes.
Yeah.
But would you have been smart enough to find different ways to reach the players without going to the places that probably you've regretted on a few occasions now?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm bright enough to figure that out. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is, with the superstars in particular, managing them seems to be, you got to keep those guys happy. You know, superstars, where do you stand on treating people differently within your room? Because you'd mentioned Wayne Gretzky, you didn't want to treat him differently, or Brett Hull, you initially didn't want to treat him differently. Do you think you have to a little bit?
Well, my coaching style, and Nick can attest to this, is that, and I said the superstars were easy. You know why they were easy? All they wanted to do is get out in the ice.
Yeah, okay.
So I'd play them the most, to a point where sometimes I was criticized for overloading the stars and playing them so much. But if you play them like that, they'll respond. That's what they love. They want to get out in the ice and play.
You know, one of the things that, being a part of a championship in New York or just in the NHL is my appreciation for how hard it is to win, Mike, and how many things have to come together and how the stars have to align in certain situations and where that fine line was. We had Paul Maurice talking about game seven where the puck is crossing the goal line 1 second and the next, you know, they go down and score a goal. And that's the difference of winning and losing. And we felt that probably
cross
with Nathan
in game seven.
Lafayette's goal post against the Vancouver Canucks. But man, is it hard.
Well, Rangers now are 1-84 years. The Maple Leafs, which is in this market, is currently facing 1967. Mm-hmm. So it is difficult, and particularly becoming more difficult. They call the word or make the comment of parity amongst the group, yeah. Amongst the teams now. You have to, I make the comment and the criticism I have had in the past and through my career is that you have to find a difference amongst your team, amongst your players. You have to somehow separate yourself from the rest of the league. And then everything after that still has to be aligned. So it's the most difficult trophy in sport, in my opinion, to win.
And you won that and the Gagarin Cup, only guy to ever do so.
I think one other now is Bob Hartley.
Oh, yeah?
I think he won after I did.
Two guys but, ever.
It's a difficult trophy to win. People don't understand.
We're all maybe gone on now, but would you, in a perfect world, still like the challenge of finding ways to win today with today's players? Is it harder for coaches now? Because, again, the feeling is that, you know, generally as a society, I think we are all probably a little bit more sensitive to a lot of things. And, you know, would you find it enjoyable to coach today under the circumstances and the things get away with?
I would tell you this is a difference maker or an explanation for that. When I was young and watching hockey and there were six teams and then you had the Montreal. Scotty Bowman was no angel. I mean.
Ask his ex-players, right?
Yeah. I mean, so when I was coaching, that comment was, well, these players are a little bit more sensitive than the old Montreal, Toronto Maple Leafs, original six. Well, they were.
Yeah.
So it's ongoing evolution of now the next generation is a little bit more sensitive and so on. So I bring up your father's coach, Al Arbour. He had to make adjustments along the way as well as the sensitivity, if you like, of the group becomes more apparent. But it also is a reflection of the leadership amongst the team and the group and also the people that they acquired. Al acquired these young players called the Sutters. Mm. Well, they were old school. They're a new generation, but old school thinking.
Yeah.
From their family, from their father. So it depends on your upbringing as well.
Speaking of family, in the book you talk about your dad.
Yeah.
And how he was supposed to come down for a week and ended up 6 weeks with you during their Stanley Cup run.
Yeah.
And, you know, how many of us had to babysit Ted a little bit in the dressing room.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, we really enjoyed having your dad around. And, you know, to the point we were so comfortable with Ted, you know, Glenn Healy would say, how are you so nice and your dad's a dink?
Yeah. Glenn Healy, eh? Yeah.
It's a bit of a good luck charm for us.
Yeah. That was during the 94 run. He was in the room and all that around. That's great.
Yeah. One last one, too, is, again, you know, a bit of an intimidating factor having you around in 94, but also with Coley Campbell and Dick Todd there and how if Mike wanted to go get advice on who would start a game, Mike didn't want Coley or Dick influencing each other on who said who should start first, so he had him write down on a piece of paper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's an effective way to go about it.
Well, we also, I don't know if you remember this, we did a commercial, but it was live. So I said, Coley, who do you want to start in goal tonight? He said, Healy. I said, Dick, Healy. I said, good, good. Richter starting.
He goes, it's unanimous. Yeah, Richter starting. Yeah.
That's great.
Well, listen, we really appreciate your time in coming in. Good luck with the book.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I know you wrote a book. And
yeah.
It's an arduous task at times.
Yeah. But it's been fascinating.
I appreciate it.
Some good, some bad, some ugly. But at the end of the day, it's your story.
That's life in a nutshell.
And that's it. Looking forward to it. Available now at all bookstores. Iron Mike, My Life Behind the Bench.
Probably online, too.
Yeah,
everywhere. Yep. Anywhere you get your book with Scott Morrison. It's a great read. Enjoy it. Okay, back after these words. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much.
The best Blue Jay show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Final segment here on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. So what did we have last night, guys? We had 5 NHL games. We had 36 goals. Yet 3 teams get shut out.
That is truly bonkers. A bonkers scoreboard last night. Yesterday, Sam was talking about Rangers Pittsburgh, and I was like, Pittsburgh, get Pittsburgh. Sports stuff to bet on.
Did the Winnipeg Jets just go, like, nobody talked about us? Like, we're making a statement.
Isn't that to you about the Oilers? Oilers at home? Nah, it's a statement unto itself a little bit, isn't it?
Buddy, listen, I all but wrote them off last year with their start. I'm not even going to think about going down that path.
Right, but it is bizarre that 2 years in a row they come out and absolutely pee down their legs.
I was watching the game, and the play-by-play guy, Jack Michaels, said, he's like, this isn't exactly a homecoming opponent here with the Jets. It's like they had 110 points last year. Like and I thought it's a good point. Like, they are kind of slept on big time, and they've got good players throughout their lineup. You know, they're going to be
They lost 6-0, Sam.
I'm talking about the Jets.
I know the Jets are, sure.
Yeah.
But the point that the Jets are a good team, fine.
They are good.
You could be the best team in the league. 6-0 after you went to game 7 of the cup final.
Oh, they're stunk.
When I saw Evan Bouchard handle the puck like a grenade and then give up the breakaway to Scheifele, I'm like,
not sharp.
This could be a tough task. I wasn't expecting 6 Cobb.
And like, I made like Skinner, like, should he get Vezina vote? You know, I'm not saying all these predictions
they
are
just the
window,
had their way.
Just like, what the hell?
The coverage,
is that?
The giveaways.
What the hell was that?
Not locked in by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
Quickly, boys, I'm going to do game time here before we get into more stuff, all right? So it's game time. It's game time. God, Derek. It's game time. Presented by Bet365.
Always cuts you off at the knees, eh?
Visit the app for the latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19+. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. He's doing it on purpose now because he knows
it. Just throws you off.
He knows. Montreal Canadiens in Boston tonight. Montreal in the second half of back-to-back. Massive underdogs for the Boston Bruins, +240. The Boston Bruins are -300. They obviously think the Boston Bruins are going to get back on track after getting smoked. Mason Lowry sitting tonight.
Lowry. You guys were killing him.
Oh, we didn't kill him.
He was awful.
Not on air, you didn't.
He was awful.
I know he was awful, but come on.
Chat was alive with the talk of Mason Lowry.
It's okay to say on one particular night,
a
guy
night.
Stunk.
Guys have bad games.
There might have been something
There
might have been something about clearing waivers in that group chat. I'm not sure what there was. Anyways, and the other one I wanted to bring up, the Utah Hockey Club plays their first road game of the season. They're going to play against Borneys Islanders. They're +130 underdogs. The Islanders are -155 on home ice. What are you expecting from your Islanders this year, Borney?
Well, Patrick Waugh came in and made them a better hockey team last year.
No question.
So I would say, you know, they got into playoffs last year, just over 90-some points. A 95-6-point team.
Mm-hmm.
Sorokin, potential Vezina candidate. Yeah. Barzal has a career year.
So very Islandery.
Very Islandery.
Do we not think, like,
make it hard on someone in the first round?
Okay.
Like, this is a make or break for Lou Lamoriello holding on to that position?
Buddy, the Engvall thing has sparked more Lamoriello chat in my phone than anything ever has before. It's like, what
was
all
your deal? The weirdest contract?
Everyone's just like,
in NHL
what happened
history?
There?
I don't know.
That is the conclusion of every chat so far. Yeah.
No idea.
He look, you know what it is? You know, pre-Moneyball, before they come in, they say they care about how a guy looks or yeah, whatever. Yeah. It's like, Engvall, he's got a hot girlfriend. Like, he must have confidence, you know? It's like, that was the assessment on Engvall. He's 6'5", skates ice, go in. He looks like Greek god. Give him money.
Look at those shoulders. Here's 7 years.
Good.
Yeah. And the last one I'll bring up, my goal-scoring parlay, tough one last night. The biggest odds, Jake DeBrus scored for me, but Matthews couldn't put one in the net. Drysdale couldn't put one in the net. Tonight, I'm going with Macklin Celebrini in his NHL debut on home ice against the St. Louis Blues, an anytime goal at plus 260.
By the way, the Bruins being minus 300 is wild.
Yeah, it's too much, but they're probably going to win.
So. Oh, they're winning. Yeah. They're winning for sure.
So yeah, give me a Macklin Celebrini anytime goal tonight against the St. Louis Blues, and that was okay. Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds. Find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
Last night, Vancouver and Calgary.
What a game.
Oh, like, my God.
It looked like Vancouver
was
hockey. In control. A great start. A 4-1 lead vanishes. Now, I don't know. I'm a little more nervous with Demko nowhere to be found.
What stinks is, like, if he plays, they win that game. Like, oh. Not that Shelovs is terrible or anything, but, like, he makes one more save.
The things I noticed, feels like Shelovs in the playoffs last year and early, tracking the puck from the point seems like a bit of a buckaboo of his.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like they get through a lot on him. I'm not sure what it is about him, but he just feels like they get through a lot on him. Love the tying goal by JT Miller, though.
We had a pretty in-depth conversation about goalies yesterday. And, you know, Shelovs has had a great finish to his season last year, taking over for Demko. But there's something to be said about coming in and with zero expectations and now
yeah,
coming in and knowing that you have to be the man now. That
yeah.
is a game changer for some guys who make this their profession in the National Hockey League.
Yeah,
perfect example here in Toronto. Samsonov last year. Remember the year before it was Murray that was starting and Samsonov was kind of the guy that came in and saved him a bit. And then last year, Samsonov comes in as a starting goalie and it
wasn't good. I think last night was at least partially about Calgary, not just Vancouver. I don't know if you heard any of the interviews after the game, but Zari and Mantha and these guys
were like... What a finish he had on the overtime.
Yeah. I mean, great goal. Mantha, by the way, showed flashes of the guy that makes everyone salivate. Great backhand, gentle hands at that size. You know, fights Miller, and Miller didn't get hit with one, but Mantha swung. Gordie Howe hat-trick. So those guys were like, no one believes in us, and the predictions think we're any good. I think every guy believes in this room. We're standing up for each other. So Calgary got some fight left in them, which I think is good. Vancouver, you know, we're not going to say it's part of a greater trend. It's one hockey game, but disappointing to let that slip away.
I did manage to flip over and caught a little bit of the Rangers and Pittsburgh.
I'll be honest, and I didn't see any of that. I saw the highlights, but
the building was empty with about, I don't know, half a period to go in the third. Mm. I don't know. Like, this is a very proud sports market, and I don't know how they're going to handle if Pittsburgh might be as bad as they portrayed as early as game one.
How can they be bad? Like, really bad? Like, I just don't see it with that roster. I know, I won't even
say. Well, the goalie stunk last night.
Yeah, but he's not a stinky goalie.
Which makes the defense look stinky.
Right.
Or is it the stinky defense that makes the goalie look stinky? Which one is it?
I don't know, but I like some of their D-men. Like, yeah, Letang and Carlson, Ryan Graves I like. Like, they got some guys who can play D.
Nice start for Gino. -3.
Was he?
Yeah. Carlson, -2.
Both those guys are bad. They're in real trouble.
Yeah.
At least if we're talking about the Washington.
Playing with O'Connor. You know,
Washington. Where do you guys have Washington compared to Pitt?
So similar.
I had them below Pitt.
You as do.
I do. I think I'll stick with it. I'm not going to change.
They did make some.
They have good additions. Matt, or they got Chychrun and Matt Roy on the back end really makes their defense better for sure. They got PLD, so maybe Dubois gives them something. They got better, but let's not mince words. They were brutal last year. They're a minus 37 goal differential last season. The Capitals. So,
and made the playoffs. Now.
And made the playoffs and looked like they deserved to, which is terrible. So they're a lot better than minus 37. Maybe they're an even team.
Yeah.
Don't like them. I think and Pittsburgh's a little bit.
Did you guys mention Swayman getting the nod tonight?
Didn't mention it yet, no.
And too early? Or are you okay with it?
What's he been doing? What's he been doing?
I don't know. He's been University of Maine hanging out.
Is that right, Maine?
Yeah, in the cafeteria. I don't know.
Just eating chicken tenders and lobster in Maine? What else do you do on campus?
Well, I think if you're going to pay him, how much do you end up getting? 8.25?
Yeah, 66.
You'd like him to be able to start the home opener against a much worse team,
mm-hmm.
a historic rival.
Yeah, you trust the guys are in shape. He's obviously been taking shots.
Yeah, you need him to start the game tonight. But you'd hope a couple early don't go in.
They were brutal against Florida. Brutal. So I actually think Montreal's going to take a licking tonight. Back-to-back for the Habs, coming down off a high of beating Toronto. You know, Boston looking to get their pound of flesh after a loss. I think this is a pretty lopsided affair.
And the Habs were quite bad in long stretches of that game last night. We're turning the puck over. And, yeah, so that's that could not be great for them. Did you see the clip of Linus Ullmark, Kipper?
I did not.
So they're playing tonight.
I think he's a Linus.
Is it? What do I say?
I think you're Linus.
What do I say?
Not
Linus?
Linus?
What do you think? He's got a blanket carrying around him?
That's a dated reference, but I get it because I'm old too.
Is that Charlie Brown?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I got that. Yeah. Anyways.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, anyways. He talked about the start of the season and what it's like at the start of the season in one of the weirdest clips I've ever heard. So would you like to hear him talking about the start of the season?
Of course.
Linus Ullmark?
Yes.
Okay, let's hear it. Ullmark clip on the start of the season.
Well, we can wait for that and discuss.
Oh, you built it up. I'm like.
Oh, no Ullmark clip.
Okay.
All right.
That was my fault.
Okay.
Here's what he says. He says.
I just put it in there.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
You can.
I can do it right now.
Science.
I always see the beginning of the season as someone that's from the north and have been around a lot of farm animals. You know, when they let out cows in the beginning of spring, that's kind of like how I see ourselves now. We're just going to go out there, jump a little bit more, jump in our steps and running around. Hopefully we can calm it down and, you know, use our brains and keep ourselves to the game plan and bring a 60-minute game.
You know what he means with the cows in the springtime?
In the north?
In the north. The way they jump around, but they need to rein it in?
I hyped it up being weird. And I don't think I hyped it up enough by the look at Kipper's face.
That's a lot to digest.
Can we have that one more time, Derek?
Yes.
Yeah, one more time.
I always see the beginning of the season as someone that's from the north and have been around a lot of farm animals. You know, when they let out cows in the beginning of spring, that's kind of like how I see ourselves now. We're just going to go out there, jump a little bit more, jump in our steps and running around. Hopefully we can calm it down and, you know, use our brains and keep ourselves to the game plan and bring a 60-minute game.
The universe is like humongous big. Thanks to Linus Brizgalov for that diatribe.
It's really too bad. The Leafs have the milk, you know, endorsement.
Okay. They're Oreo now.
Ottawa. Uh-huh. Ottawa should have it.
Yeah.
No, the Leafs are milk and Oreo.
Which is really
They're cute. Milk and cookies.
Yeah.
Mm. So.
That was really weird.
I like it, though. Let it go, son.
You know, we're all farmers out there. You know the way cows react to the spring.
The funny thing is to say that,
right?
Like, you guys know what I mean.
No. You're from the West. You wouldn't have any idea what's going on here to start the season. Yeah. Who's from the North? Yes. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Ian Mendez is from the North. You got to know
this guy. Knows.
But big game for them tonight. Yep. You know, they're starting the season home ice.
I got something for you.
Who's coming to town?
I got
brother Matthew and the Panthers.
Yeah, so. What a tough start. They got the Sens, got Florida right out of the gate. So I'm going on the television after this. I'm actually on in 40 minutes in a suit. And one of the things I'm going to talk about is the Senators and their starts and how they need better starts. 20 games into the season, going back five years.
Yeah, it was over.
Over. Like,
over.
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 Here's their rank in the Eastern Conference the last five seasons. 15th after 20 games. 15th, 7th, 16th, 16th, 16th. Three straight years they've been dead last. The year they were seventh, that was the North Division year, COVID, weird year. So,
wow.
Yeah. Seventh, sir. They were seventh in the division. So, really, they've been dead last for four straight years.
Wow.
Listen,
you just need a better start.
Between Ottawa and Buffalo, Detroit, like, there's a ton of pressure on these three clubs.
A lot of talk about every year. You know, this year, the Atlantic, you know, they kind of make that change. So, what has to happen then for me is Jake Sanderson needs to become a star. Stützle needs to take a step. You need, like, the top-end guys to be the top-end guys on Toronto and Boston and Florida. Mm-hmm. Like, elite players to drive the bus for them. So, we'll see what kind of start they have. Tough draw getting Florida out of the gates, but maybe that'll just make them a little bit sharper playing against such a good team to start.
They could use a few more saves from Allmark, too. Would probably help a lot.
Allmark being good would really help.
Like the North cows out of the barn.
Yeah.
That's what they need from him.
You need him to be a barn cow. What else we got? We got Stamkos tonight.
Boone Jenner out.
Yeah,
most of the season now.
Waddell mentioned that he may be able to return later in the season. I think so. Yeah, I think he may be back later in the season. But yeah, the surgery or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, man, oh man, I feel for this hockey club.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, they signed Van Riemsdyk at the end of summer. He's in their top six. They signed LeBanc out of on a PTO. I think he's top six for them. You know, and then it's Chinnikov, Monahan, Marchenko is their top line. Mm-hmm. Van Riemsdyk, Fantilli, LeBlanc, and then Michael Pythia. You guys know where I'm going from there.
They should go get, like, Phil Kessel.
Phil Kessel is actually headlining a poker event.
I know. I saw that.
Yes, the World Poker Tour. He's the...
Yes.
He's... Yeah.
But, I mean, we tried the Phil Kessel thing last year.
Who's we?
The Canucks.
Yeah, he went out.
They brought him there, and he was huffing. They brought he couldn't.
But that's a deeper team than what Columbus is going through now.
Kipper, he couldn't skate with the Abbotsford guys. Like, he was sucking wind after 10 minutes.
It'd be a long fitness.
Maybe
there's a reason he's not.
I
love Phil Kessel. One of my favorite Leafs ever. Big Phil Kessel guy. Awesome career.
All right, I just threw it out there because I know he was playing poker.
He's the man. Love Phil. I just think it might be over for Phil.
Yeah.
But to your point, Columbus is going to have to get creative about waiver claims, mm-hmm. perhaps some transactions. One thing I will say, I really dislike when teams just kind of go, we're hoping to get a high pick, so we're just going to just play the year out. You still have to compete. You still have fans. You still have players on your team that are young who deserve teammates that can play. I think they need to make some moves. They're still going to finish bottom five if they traded for five good players.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see them not just be complacent here.
Hurricanes and Lightning postponed.
It was the Wyshynski tweet on that?
Yeah. Wyshynski, give him credit. Great tweet. Hurricanes and Lightning postponed due to Hurricane and Lightning.
Yeah.
So quite good. It's good tweet. See the roof of the Tropicana Field?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Looked like paper mache on the field.
Oh, my gosh.
Ripped up.
Yeah.
So.
Thoughts with everyone in Florida dealing with back-to-back hurricanes.
Yes,
and obviously the south in east general. In general
yeah.
there.
You want a quick read off of a giveaway?
Hmm?
Rogers giveaway?
Sure. I can do that for you.
Pay the bills, Sammy.
Put me on the spot here.
Pay the bills.
All right. Well, I had no time to practice this in the mirror. This is a cold read. Wasn't expecting to do it. So here we go. The NHL is back. You can catch all the action this season, all season long, on Sportsnet, Sportsnet Plus, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. To celebrate the start of the new season, Rogers is giving away hundreds of prizes through a national Rogers Beyond the Seat contest, including the grand prize of a chance to win any NHL... A chance to win a trip to any NHL game this season... To enter for your chance to win, head to rogers.com/NHL. Contest closes on October 25th.
You know why I did that? Because it was your birthday yesterday. You didn't mention it. You didn't mention
birthday,
it to
Sammy.
Us.
No, I know. You should just know that, Kimmy.
Happy belated birthday,
thanks.
Sammy.
Thanks,
young
man.
Guy.
Thanks.
All right.
What a milestone.
Our thanks to Mike Keenan in studio. 9 games on tap. Find yours. And we're back tomorrow to discuss them all. Have a great night, everybody.